I'm pleased to see you all got the memo, so starting an hour early today, and today only. Will you please pray with me, O Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, Beloved Jesus Christ, Blessed Master,
Dearest Mother,
Saints and Sages of all religions,
I bow to all of you.
Free my life from all obstacles. And give me physical, mental, and spiritual development. Make my mind thy temple. Make my heart thy altar. Make my love thy home. Be thou the only King. Reigning on the throne of my consciousness. Peace. Amen. Thought I'd read to you from posting this morning. And on the front is a picture of Swami Satchidananda and Swami Chidananda and myself. Swami Chidananda is a well-known Swami from the Divine Life Society. And he had requested to see me here. I had a couple of roommates because the ashram was so full. It was Swami Satchidananda's 50th anniversary of his coming to the ashram. And Swami Chidananda is also very popular in Europe and in the West, and so there's many Western devotees there. Swami Satchidananda asked me to look after all of the Western devotees during the time the ashram was filled to the brim. And every time Swami Satchidananda, and his name was Gopi at the time, became Swami Muktananda later, every time Swami Muktananda would see me coming walking the other way, he'd say, "Oh, there's David G in charge of all the Westerners," and he'd break into huge laughter. I didn't quite understand what all the laughter was until after a little while, trying to shepherding some of the Westerners, I find that we're very whiny and a lot of crybabies, and we want this and we want that, and everything got funneled through me. So I think I saw where all the laughter was, some relief that they didn't have to deal with it. So Swami Chidananda is a wonderful soul. This picture is from 1999. And I wrote, "Papa says chanting Ram Nam is sweet, like candy in the mouth. In fact, no words can describe the bliss felt when chanting God's holy name. You may say that God has no name that can be spoken with the human tongue, and it is also true that every name is His name. However, there are certain names of God in all languages that have been surcharged through sacred repetition that has lifted up saints into the highest consciousness, like a trail that has been blazed through the wilderness." Please come. Find a place. Over here, John.
I know which room it is.
All right.
Straight ahead when it's closed.
Okay. Okay. "However, there are certain names of God in all languages that have been surcharged through sacred repetition that has lifted up saints into the highest consciousness, like a trail that has been blazed through the wilderness by thousands of years and thousands of feet that wear even sharp stones to smoothness. Ram Nam auspiciously qualifies as one of the most ancient and well-used of such incantations." It is God experience alone that is the true name of God. Seeing the sacred light, hearing the soaring Om or Amen, feeling the uplifting currents in the spine and brain and expanding into infinite spirit. Like a symphony orchestra, God can be the power of a violent storm or the sweetest touch of a spring breeze upon the soft petals. God experience encompasses all experience and is far, far beyond ordinary perception. When I was a truck driver, I drove mile after mile chanting the holy name of Ram Nam. God lifted me up, my eyes partially closed, leaving only enough consciousness in the world to operate the truck. Sometimes he completely closed my eyes and took me into pure spirit with such a rush of bliss and power in the spine. Then, of course, I had to pull over and park on the side of the road. It took time and many, many experiences, but gradually the blockages were removed, so that now there is only the pure flow up the spine. The name of God as Om resounds all around. God's thoughts flows through my own. His love animates my heart, and his life force walks and talks through this form. Far from creating ego, this experience makes me absolutely know that of myself I am nothing, truly nothing. It is he, it is he, it is all he. Where is there room for ego when that is the case? Oh, what a love affair God has created. He makes us journey far away from him in consciousness. Then he draws us back to himself, creating magnetism when the time is right that we cannot and do not want to resist. In this moment, it is he who writes these words. It is he who reads them. It is he who charges them with his uplifting power to draw those who he has chosen to draw to himself. What a wonderful play he has enacted. When there is nothing but he, what is there to fear? If he wants a certain thing to happen, nothing can stop it. If he wants something not to happen, nothing can make it so. Our trying to go it alone is his trial in ignorance. Our surrender to him is his movement in time and space that purifies creation. Our part is to witness what he does within and all about us. It may be that these words make no sense to you, and that that is his will. It may be that you feel he is speaking these words directly to you and through you, and that is his will as well. Many times I hear or see the words of a great master, such as Mother, Master, or Papa, and I feel that the words spoken are my very own, for he makes me feel that kind of intimacy with these wonderful human expressions of himself. Now, he tells me, it is time to wake up. It is time for you to wake up, to feel God weaving himself through every experience you have in life, and to know that it is he alone who exists, without a second. Why should you suffer separation for one moment longer? There is no reason. He is calling you with his divine magnetism. It is he, it is he, it is all he. There is nothing else. So be that. It can all start with chanting his holy name. Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram. Victory to God, victory to the light. And reading from this latest Cross and Lotus Journal from Mother. This world is a world of duality. You will never have utopias here on the outside. There will always be things to face. There will be problems to overcome. There will be dissension on the outside. But the important part is that you have got yourself together in one piece, that you have faced yourself, and that you are willing to admit your own weaknesses, your own failings, and not to blame them on somebody else. That must be done if you are to rise out of the dead into the great light of God within yourself. Until you realize that finally, at long last, you have become the master, not of other people, but of yourself. And that is why people call many people masters. Of course, in the Christian world, the Christians believe only in one master. But the Christ himself didn't say that. He said, no disciple can become greater than the master. But the disciple, if he measures up, can become as great as the master. As we have said many times, quoting him, all these works that I do, you may do also, and even greater works than these that I do, you may do. This is what we are beginning, and every single soul here, and all that we can gather to us is needed in order to accomplish this great purpose. I can work myself to death, but I can't do it alone. I'm only one person, and it is through God's grace that I'm able to do whatever I do, even as it is His grace that you do whatsoever you are able to do. But every moment my heart is with Him. Every moment I am listening inside. What do you want me to do next, Lord? What shall I think? What shall I say? How shall I handle this? And sometimes I don't even need to stop and think, because this body, this mind, this soul belongs so completely to Him that it just flows through. He just uses it in whatever way He wants to. Then I stand there afterwards sometimes wondering how that happened. What came out of my mouth wasn't what I would have meant to say, or what I had decided to say, or anything about it. It wasn't taken away from me. It was taken away from me. In other words, I was lifted up. I was used for God's own purpose. We aren't just here to cater to ourselves and our own egos. We're put here for His purpose. We are put here to manifest His light and His love and His power and His intelligence in the highest way possible. Sure, it's difficult to get there, but isn't it worth it? Would you rather carry a burden on your back all the rest of your life and always be caught in between those two forces, never once being free to be yourself, to succeed in rising above all these trials and troubles and tribulations? Believe me, it is worth the effort. Regardless of how long it takes you, eventually you are free. And when you have once been liberated, when you have once risen up, when you are liberated, then you are liberated then from this world. You can go on. You are absorbed into the source of all life, which is God Himself, which existed even before a word was spoken, which is pure and absolute spirit, and is beyond anything that you can use to describe it. You have to experience that. If all of us could be that, how wonderful it would be. We would get away from fear. We would get away from always worrying about where our next day meal was coming from and what we are going to do about this debt or that debt or the other debt, because God would take care of the whole thing. And He does. If you seek Him first and His kingdom of heaven, then and then alone, all the other things are added unto you. But everybody wants it backwards. Lord, you give me this, and then I will give you that for you. And when He does not give it to us, before we have done what He has asked us to do, we forget our promise to Him, and we think, well, I've got it now. I've got it made. I'll go out and do the same thing again. And who's going to know the difference? But who does know the difference? God. Because He is your very self. Whatever you do, whatever you think, whatever you say is known to Him, because He lives inside of you. He is that great spirit, that life force within you, the Supreme One, who is wearing this body that you call your own, and you feel separated from Him? No way are you separated from Him. He is your real self. So, from now on, realize that. Make the supreme effort. I'd like to see the face of every single one who comes into this congregation filled with the light of God. I want to see each one loving one another, serving one another, and to a great sense, that is now being done. But let us do it even more, until we become the example for a world, no matter what happens to us, what persecutions we have to go through. We may well get into it, and we may well have a war, because there are people who will hate us. The dark forces always hate the light. They try to destroy it because it threatens them. But love God so much that it doesn't make any difference to you, that you are willing to lay down your life for Him, which is His anyway, in order to change this world from darkness that it is now in, into a place of peace and wonder and glory and beauty. We are the pioneers. Let us make a good start and build a firm foundation. Let us be the examples for a world, not in pride, not thinking that you are better than anyone else, but just the love of God. And the glory and the wonder and the beauty and the bliss of what comes to us will be payment such as you have never dreamed of. It will be poured upon you until sometimes that bliss comes to you so greatly that you can scarcely stand to hold it within yourself. I know, for I have been there. Believe me. The summa cum laude of life. Coming into the great realization of who and what you truly are, it's really the summation of life. As you all know, I think, John, who has recently left the body, was such a sincere devotee, desiring to know God. Like many of us, he faced great trials, and sometimes in those trials, fell short of the goal, and that creates great pain for us in the soul. It's a story of every one of us who sincerely puts our feet upon the path. Because God tests us, He comes up in ways that we can scarcely imagine before we enter into the spiritual path. If we are true, if we are sincere, we will stick with it. We will keep going. And finally, we will overcome, not because of our own power, but because we have awakened the divine power of God within us. This is the great secret, a great magic. We sometimes look at ourselves, we look at our world, we look at our own problems, and we think that it's all too much, that we can't do it, that we can't get beyond it all. We've tried in the past and nothing seems to work. It's not enough. That is simply because God has not been awakened enough within us. The supreme power of this universe, you think about this creation. You think about tremendous volcanoes. You think about the air, the atmosphere, the sun that shines, everything that is going on within this vast universe, the power and the intelligence of it all. And it is but a small subset of what God is, because this creation is an expression of Him. But He is so much more than that. Then you think that that same divine power is inside of you, and you doubt it, because you say, I just know who I am. I'm just this one little person who's walking upon this mud ball, the earth. Who am I? How can I have that tremendous power that is all of God existing right inside of me? Mother used to say that when she stood with her 2 feet upon this earth, she was connected to the entirety of this earth. It's a very interesting statement because it relates to our connection with God. We can have a connection with God that is as thin as a tiny little thread. But in that tiny little thread, we are connected to the entirety of what God is. When we keep our mind firmly connected to that connection with God, then God grows in us. God grows in grace, grows in intelligence, grows in purity. And He does all the heavy lifting. We have to do the work to keep our mind upon Him, to love Him, to serve Him. But He does everything else. When this tremendous transformation started to happen in my life, it came as God and Guru's grace. And this Kundalini force erupted inside of my spine. And it was a power so tremendous, it just lifted me up and riveted my conscious attention upon the ajna. And a tremendous heat was created there. That was the beginning. That was the beginning. It is the baptism of fire that Jesus speaks about. There are so many things that are spoken about in the Bible that are not understood. They're seen or try to be seen in a historical context or something that's coming in the future. But Jesus described the evolution of every individual from the human to the divine. We imagine that there will be a Christ who will come out of the cloud someplace, and He's going to, frankly, He's going to kick a little butt, and He's going to take names, and He's going to straighten this world out. But that's not the way that it happens. It never has. From the very beginning, from the very inception, as consciousness began to grow and expand, from the mineral, it came into the vegetable kingdom and plants, and then gradually evolved into animal, and then into human. Why does human stand at the pinnacle? It is because we have a unique creation in us. We have a unique spine and brain that runs vertically up. And as a result of that, consciousness can express itself in a unique way within this human body. Now, it doesn't make us all angels, and that is for certain. We can look out on this world and see that many people misbehave. But it doesn't deny the potentiality that lies inherent within us. We are all made in the likeness and in the image of God. But most of us truly don't see it. We don't see the image of God. We don't feel it. We don't express it. But it doesn't mean that it's not there, but it comes as a seed. A seed as tiny as a mustard seed, as Jesus talked about, that comes in within us and is residing there. But as long as we give all of our attention to this body and to the world of the senses, that seed resides dormant. But when we begin to warm up our love for God, our desire for realization, then that seed begins to send out tendrils. And some of it seeks out roots deep into this body and into this earth. And some of it reaches up for the blue heavens and sky up above. It gets active. And as it gets active, we get dissatisfied with this life. We get dissatisfied with ourselves. We want something more. We doubt it, and yet we believe in it at the same time. We're caught between these two opposing forces. But that faith slowly begins to grow, and as we get dissatisfied with this world and what we see, we realize that this world can never really offer us true and lasting happiness. We get occasional hits of happiness. We do something, and we get some pleasure. We get some satisfaction from it. But it's got a short shelf life. And even if we established a life in this world that was just perfect in every way that we wanted, eventually we leave this body. And when we do, we leave everything of this world behind us. So there is no way that this world can offer us the kind of lasting happiness that we yearn for. That can only come from God consciousness. God consciousness is that seed that begins to grow and grow inside of us. It seeks out the light. And as it seeks out the light, we begin to get God experience. We get lifted up. We feel the peace. We feel the bliss. We feel the love and the light of God stirring within us. At first, it comes just occasionally. But it's enough that it tells us there truly is something more in life than just eating and sleeping and going through the daily routines. There's got to be more. And so we taste that, we feel it, we're uplifted in it. And then it goes away from us. I remember one time being in this wonderfully uplifted state. And it's very subtle the way that thought comes in. And a thought came in that I attached myself to as a worldly thought. And at first, the upliftment maintained itself, but then it was like a heavy lead weight on a balloon that started to bring the balloon back down to earth, and I began to lose that peace and that bliss that I'd been feeling so greatly, and I didn't want it to go away. I didn't want it to go away, not at all. I wanted to live in it forever. But away it went, and I slowly saw it sinking out of sight and out of my experience. And it's maddening, it's maddening. And as you get more and more of that peace and bliss of God, the more you want it. And the more you want it, the more dissatisfied you are when it's not there. This is by design, because it awakens that intense desire inside of you. Unless we have that intense desire for God, we cannot attain Him. Because our mind will be dwelling on the things of the senses in this world. And God gives us exactly what we want. If that's what we want, He gives it to us. But if we want Him, He will give Himself to us. But that intensity of desire has to grow, has to become more intense. If it does not, then we are just milquetoast. We're not this or we're not that. We're fence sitters. And after a while, that fence gets pretty uncomfortable. We don't like sitting on it anymore. But until it becomes so uncomfortable that we are willing to do whatever it takes to realize that infinite presence within us, then we will just simply sit on the fence. This is a path of activity, of action, of intense desire and intense love. Because you cannot have God with all those things. We switch that desire from the things of this world to the things of God. I used to listen to pop music when I was driving from here to there. And music generally has the lyrics that either you're feeling ecstatically happy because something good has happened, perhaps you've fallen in love or something of that nature, or you're intensely unhappy because you've lost that very same love and you bounce back and forth in between. And I just simply took those lyrics and I turned them towards God. If it was a you done me wrong kind of song, then that's what I would think for God. This is, I betrayed you, I dedicated myself to this world, and now I am missing you. And this world has done me wrong. I thought it would contain all this happiness, and it does not. Or if it was a love song and ecstatically in love with God or with another person, I would transfer that onto God. And it was this great love for God. So you can take the things of this world, everything that you have in your life, and you can transfer the normal kind of desire nature onto God Himself. If you want security, if you want peace, look to God for that. This world can never offer. We think, well, I don't have enough rent money, or I don't have this, or I don't have that. And we can get those things, and it temporarily solves the problem. But it is only God who can give us that lasting happiness. That seed has to come forth, and it turns into a beautiful blossom. We're seeing springtime right now, and all of these beautiful tulips and various plants that are all coming into bloom. And it's beautiful. It's wonderful. When God comes into bloom in you, you have a divine romance with him. You feel that love. You feel that joy. When that heart center opened inside of me, it was such a tremendous revelation. Before that, I didn't feel like I had any love for anyone, for anything. I didn't know. Love was a foreign word to me. And then that divine love awakened inside of me, and it wasn't easy. It was like my heart bursting open. That seed came and literally broke my heart open. And it was extremely painful. Extremely painful. But when it did, that divine love flowed out from it in such great measure, and it came from an invisible source. I didn't have to manufacture it. I didn't have to make it. It came from God himself, and it flowed out to this world. It doesn't flow to any particular individual. It's unlike human love in that sense. It doesn't need reciprocity. If you give me this, I'll give you that. If you don't do what I don't like, or if you do what I don't like, then I'm not going to love you. Or if you do what I like, then maybe I'll feel kindly towards you. That's human love. Divine love is a state of love in itself. It flows, and yet it is a state of being at the same time. And it flows out to all this world. It flows out to all beings, all sentient beings everywhere, all animals, all nature. It flows constantly and abidingly because it's not looking for any reciprocity. There's no closing it down. There's no sometimes this and sometimes that. So it's tremendous. It really is. It's beyond human comprehension because all of our loves are all contingent. And if we don't get exactly what we want, then forget you, buddy. You're off the list. And we're on to seek out somebody new. So divine love is superior in absolutely every way. And it sweetens life and normal everyday relationships because you're not looking for reciprocity. If somebody doesn't do something that you like in the moment, love flows anyway. Now, Papa said that he saw God in everyone. And he said that actually served a purpose. That when he saw God in every individual, that lifted that individual up. You think about what power you send to other people through your thoughts. And when you criticize another individual, when you find fault with them constantly, there is a power that goes out with that. And as a result of that, that person has to fight whatever it is that you're sending them to overcome it. But think about sending out the power of seeing God in the individual and how they would respond to that. Think about people in your life who have seen you perhaps better than you see yourself. And you want to live up to that. You want to please them because they're seeing such goodness in you. And think of somebody seeing God in you and how you might like to live up to that, how you might like to become that. If we want to change this world, if we want to make this world a better place, this is the way to do it. Then God will direct your actions. You may give to one person and not to somebody else, not because you're not feeling love towards that somebody else, but simply God is not moving in you in that direction because he knows best. It's not always best to give everything somebody wants because they have some lesson to learn in there. There needs to be some upliftment. There needs to be some transformation, some lesson learned for that individual. And perhaps they're being stubborn. Perhaps they're not learning their lesson. And giving to them would only prolong them from learning their lesson. How do we know? We don't know. We don't have the wisdom to know. Only God can know. So God will direct you. God will show you when to step in. It's like a dance. You step in one moment and you step back the next. You're listening to the divine music that's playing inside of you. and it's beautiful and it's graceful. And you don't have to worry about persons and be a respecter of persons, because it is God who is directing you and showing you exactly what to do. This is a wonderful life and a wonderful opportunity that we have. And what if we don't take this opportunity? Then we are sent back out into the world again. And we live our life and perhaps many, many, many lives. And God will fulfill our every desire. If that's what we want, then that's what He will give us. And then gradually, we will tire of all of this. And we will come to that point where we will turn to Him only. We don't want Him for His gifts. We don't want Him for all the things that we desire. We simply want Him because that is the fulfillment of what we really, truly, blessedly want. We want Him only. And when God feels that, when the power of that magnetism builds inside of us, where we truly want only Him, He cannot stay away. He is our slave then. He must come to us. He cannot resist you when your love is built to that degree. And even that love, feeling that love, that is His grace. That is His grace that comes to you. It's interesting in John's last days, because he had been traveling to India, as God prompted him to do, stayed at Ramana Ashram, which is a beautiful ashram in Tiruvannamalai. And one day he just felt the inner prompting, it's time to go to Anandashram. It's time to go. And so he left on the bus, and he said that bus was like a magic carpet ride the whole way. It's just that grace was with him. And he got to the ashram, and I think he wouldn't mind at all if I told you, John had been a great jnani. He had a tremendous mind. And he thought of discrimination. But love he didn't feel in his heart, and he missed it. It's something that he desired and wanted. That feeling of God inside. The path of the jnani can be quite dry. And it is bhakti that gives us that moistness, that gives us that water of life. And in coming to the ashram, he is chanting Ram Nam. And for the first time, he was feeling that great bliss of God, the love of God, the feeling of God. And then, just shortly after, he dropped the body. And so God fulfilled his wish. He gave him what he wanted, and then the time was right. This world is not everything, and we should not forget that. It's just a temporary place. We're all renters. None of us are buyers. We just simply have come for a short amount of time. But we think this is our all and all. We get so attached to it. But when we see past this world, we see that there are many, many more souls that exist outside of this world than exist in it. As many as there are that are here, there are many more beyond it. There are vast worlds, more beautiful worlds, more enlightened worlds. And we are drawn when we leave this body. Our desires determine where we go. And if we had led a very dark life, we go into a dark place. We're just like fish enter into the water, worms enter into the ground, birds fly in the air. We're just attracted to where we belong. And if we've lived a deeply spiritual life, and sought out the presence of God, then we are drawn into the higher realms. And if our karma is not yet complete, that means our desire nature is not yet completely fulfilled, then we are drawn back to this earth, because that is where our desires can become fulfilled. It's not punishment. It's just simply where we belong next. And we have this repetition of cycle until finally, we have resolved all of these desires and we are God alone, God's alone. Then when we leave this body, we merge into his being, into his infinite being, because that is where we are drawn to. That is our true desire. And so this is a wonderful life, and nobody fails. We fail temporarily. We do. But we don't fail permanently. I one time asked a Christian, so, according to you, when you die, you will go into heaven. By your calculation, the vast majority of the world will be down in hell. I said, how can that be heaven for you? How can you be happy knowing that all of these people are suffering eternally with no option to get out? And you know, he actually had an answer for me. It quite surprised me. He said, God makes you forget. I thought, well, that's interesting. But I said, God can't forget. And God loves us more than a mother or a father loves his own child. What a ridiculous notion. Now, when we are suffering, and when we are in hellish consciousness, and it exists all around us, believe me, there are people who are, it feels eternal. It feels like it will never end. It's not true, but that's our experience of it when we're in it. Think about times when you've been sick and you can't even remember, even though it's just a day before that you were well, you can't even almost remember being well again. You're consumed with the idea of sickness. So hell can certainly feel forever when you're in it. But what kind of God would that be? This is a short amount of time on this earth, 60, 70, 80 years, whatever time we have. That's a snap of the fingers, a blink of the eye when it comes to eternity, and we would be sentenced to hell for all time. It makes absolutely no sense at all. No sense at all. So all beings are drawn back to God because they came from God. They're part and parcel of God. He could not do without them any more than they can do without him. And so it must be. It must be. But do we want to wait? Because God will wait for as long as our desire nature draws us out into this world. But do we want to wait? Do we want to have the pain of that separation? So John had this wonderful experience before he left the body in order to act as wings that would take him up into the higher realms. It's a wonderful, sincere devotee. I have great love for him. So let us also strive, mind, heart, and soul. Let us love God more than we love this world. And let us attain into that higher realm of consciousness, even while we live here on this earth. This is the great secret. We do not need to wait. There's no great virtue in dying in a body. Everybody does that. What virtue is there in that? But when we die to the things of this world out of love for God, that is truly worth a death embracing. But it is not death in the ordinary sense. It is death of ignorance. It is death of separation from the One. And it lifts us into the bliss and the peace and the light of God's eternal being. And there is nothing better than that. I wanted to read to you from Kabir, one of his beautiful poems. And Kabir writes, O servant, where dost thou seek me? Lo, I am beside thee. I am neither in the temple nor in the mosque. I am not in Kaaba or Kailash. Neither I am in rites and ceremonies nor in yoga and renunciation. If thou art a true seeker, thou shalt at once see me. Thou shalt meet me in a moment of time. Kabir says, O Sadhu, God is the breath of all breath. So close, so intimate, so knowable. Part of the problem is God is so close, so intimate, so much a part of our beings that we don't even recognize him. It's like a piece of furniture that we've quit noticing. And it is sad. It is sad. So let us strive for that fullness of realization. It is not beyond anyone who is in this room. And let us know God as he truly is. Now, if you'll pray with me, O Heavenly Father,
Divine Mother,
I feel the wonder and the beauty
of
thy glorious presence in every part of my being. My heart is bursting with my love for thee. I kneel in adoration at thy feet and surrender myself to thee. I feel the power of thy perfection.
I feel the power of thy perfection.
Surging in every cell of my body.
Surging in every cell of my body.
My mind and my intelligence. Are radiant with thy healing light.
My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss.
Of my communion with thee. I and my Father are one. Blessed Spirit, I am He. I bow to the light within you, that infinite glorious light. Please stand with me for a moment.